They'll call it a mystery, but we're gonna call it
victory.
We'll be writing history. It's gonna be
victory.
They'll be signs on top.
Next up, Counter Stories, our regular conversation by people of color, for people of color and everyone else. This conversation started in a theater. Hosts Anthony Galloway, Luz Maria Frias, Halee Lee, Don Eubanks, and I all went to see Hidden Figures so we could discuss the movie on this show. There was also news this morning. Hidden Figures was nominated for Best Picture Oscar, and Octavia Spencer nominated for Supporting Actress. The movie tells the true story of the black women who worked as mathematicians at NASA during the 60s when the space race was heating up. You know the stories of the astronauts who made it to space, Alan Shepard and John Glenn. But what are the numbers of people? What about the numbers people who made the science work? The word computer back then referred to a person, not a machine. And these black women computers excelled at their jobs working out the formulas that got us to space. In this scene, actress Taraji Henson, who portrays Katherine Goebbels, shows up for her new assignment at NASA's Space Task Group. She's the first woman of color in a room of mostly white men. Her boss is portrayed by Kevin Costner.
Ruth, what's the status on that computer?
She's right behind you, Mr. Harrison.
Does she handle analytic geometry?
Absolutely. And she speaks.
Yes, sir, I do.
Which one?
Both. Geometry and speaking.
Ruth, get me the... You think you can find me the Frenet frame for this data? Using the Gram-Schmidt...
Orthogonalization algorithm? Yes, sir. I prefer it over Euclidean coordinates.
The Counter Stories host sat down to discuss their reactions to the movie. Here's Halee Lee.
I was angry when I left the theater for two reasons. Mostly I was angry at our educational system because we had never learned this. We had never learned about the people who were any of the engineers, not just the white and not just the black engineers, but anybody, right? We were all told that... John Glenn was the hero, and we were never taught that there are other people who actually did computing when we were growing up, right? I mean, we learned about this when we were in fifth, sixth grade. So I was angry about that, not learning about that, because I think if you taught younger kids about how it came about, it would give them much more career aspirations to do things other than the typical, you know, things. But the other thing was, I was always taught that John Glenn was the first man in space ever. And this movie taught me that we weren't the first. America wasn't the first.
No. Yuri Gagarin was the
first
man.
Yeah, and so
in
when
space.
I saw that, I was like, that can't be true. You know, because, I mean, I was born 20 years later, and we were taught that it was John Glenn. And so it's...
First American.
No, Alan Shepard was the first American. John Glenn was the first American to orbit the Earth.
To orbit.
Alan Shepard went up and down.
So we were never taught the
difference
of all that.
Actually, a chimp was shot up first.
You're right.
Before everything.
That's right.
No. I mean, so in a historical context, because my reaction is totally different than yours, because I lived through the period. So to watch and view that movie, my reaction was, it was such a great story. And it just solidifies what you had commented on, Hilly, the fact that so much of our history, regardless of whether we're African American, Native American, or any other type of ethnicity in this country, is that other than Booker T. Washington or Frederick Douglass, mm-hmm. you know, there mm-hmm. are main characters that we're taught about. But all the other contributions by communities of color to this country is not relayed or not shared. So we don't get that history. So from that perspective, the movie just blew me away, the fact that these women were able to endure what they were endure. Part of my reaction was also being alive during that period, remembering the race, remembering the feeling of being a young boy, being raised in this environment, knowing that Russia had sent someone up before us, and the tremendous... tension it caused in this country, the fact that we weren't first in that regard. Then it also reminded me of when my dad, who's African-American, passed a test, actually went through training, became a computer technician for controlled data.
Mm-hmm.
during the same time period.
I had quite a few family members who worked at Control
Data. Exactly. I mean, and that's when they were kind of allowing us out. Mm-hmm. You know, it was shortly after us being allowed out of the projects and the fact that my dad and my mom were able to attempt to buy a home for the first time, which was in the 60s.
They had some early executives of color at Control Data as well.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And for me, I was having all this historical recollection and memories flowing of living through that time period. And just, again, just leaving that movie, just feeling reaffirmed that as a culture that, you know, there are so many things about our stories that are not told. And this was just such a reaffirming thing, you know, which is the image leaving that film is totally opposite the image that we're bombarded with day in and day out, and that what most Americans tend to think, and that even our new president has framed in his speech in terms of inner city and plight, and, you know, is that, you know, our community is vast.
That opening scene when they have, I think it was Catherine's character, at a chalkboard and solving
as a child.
And solving these equations, and then the deans of the schools then gathering with her parents and informing them that she's a gifted child and having the ability to send her elsewhere. So I won't give away all the moody, but
elsewhere, that is a school for colored children, right, in that day. I mean, it wasn't an all-white school.
Right.
It was like, we have one or two schools for students of color, for black children in this part of the country, and your child is so gifted, we have to send her to it.
Right. What struck me at that point was how many thousands, if not millions, of children of color whose genius ability has been left at the table.
Yes.
That we haven't, as a society, created the opportunities for our youth to tap their fullest potential. And you can debate all you want about why and how and who's responsible, but the end point is still a valid point, meaning that we have all of this untapped talent in our communities that goes unnoticed, that goes unused, that goes uncelebrated. You know, and I think about Maren Wright Edelman's quote, you can't dream it if you can't see it. Unless our children of color are given the opportunity to see someone who's excelling like that, and of course we know a lot about the belief gap and teachers who either believe or don't believe that our children have that potential and have high expectations in them from the onset, our children don't have any frame of reference, any contextual type of background to kind of get them there. And that to me, for as beautiful as the film was, as inspiring as it was, that still left a big part of me that was troubled, that we as a society need to do better, you know, and that we need to be far more accountable to ourselves as adults in this community, in our country, to allow our children and our youth to thrive to their fullest potential.
Again, this makes me mad at our educational system. Okay, yeah. Because one thing that I've noticed on the rise a lot is STEM, right? Science, technology, engineering,
math.
Big push right now.
While a lot of schools are pushing that, you know what's getting pushed out are things like English and art and music. And so I feel like our country is never whole in the educational system. It's always liberal arts, liberal arts, liberal arts. And now it's STEM, 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 but we can't do both.
There's a perfect example. There's a moment where Catherine's at the chalkboard and they're trying to figure out this problem. And they're trying to figure out a new way to solve this problem.
Yeah.
And it wasn't specifically her her giftedness at mathematical concepts that was the aha. it was her recollection of historical practice, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. Something that is definitely tied to the idea of Sankofa, or that looking at the past, or that, you know, looking back to know where we're going in the future, which is something that was instilled. They didn't go as deep into that, but that was part of her learning in, as in her family. So she had that rich sense of culture. That brought the gap, right? Yeah. That critical thinking piece that's in there. When you introduce STEM, and this is an important way, this one way of being, you know, this is another thing I loved about the movie, in that you got to see not only somebody who was really, really gifted as a mathematician and loved it and had that natural proclivity, right? But then we also have an engineer, and then you also have a woman who shows gifted, extraordinary leadership and picks up a manual, mm-hmm, and outdoes an entire company's experts,
yeah,
in order to bring the computers in. And then it normed that genius, yeah, and a whole room full of black women who are functioning as computers.
Well, and I would add to that the grit. Mm-hmm. So she displayed a grit, and actually her entire team did, all mm-hmm of them did, displayed a grit that was unique to them, because their colleagues were all giving up. And they were giving up. They were saying, you know, you couldn't do it this particular way. That wasn't a route that was available. And they would not accept defeat at no point. And that was the other part of it that was beautiful about the movie.
Just to back up for people who haven't seen the movie yet, it starts off with these three black women, and they actually open the scene with car trouble, and they get a police escort because the policeman learns they work for NASA and they're helping to win the space race, which goes to Don's point about how important the space race was. In the corner of this NASA campus in Virginia was this basement room where all the black women worked, and they were the computers. And the act of computing was such a, I don't know, low enough job that we could let black women do it. So as the movie progresses, Catherine's character and the character played by Janelle Monáe get other jobs elsewhere in NASA. So after learning how then to go work in a room full of white men, which they, you know, had to do a lot, and learning about things like how hard it was to go to the bathroom, because there was only one colored bathroom.
Can we talk about that? That for me, when I spoke to a number of friends and in my circle afterwards who had seen the film, that really was an aha moment for them. So the scene, to set it up for our listeners, is that Catherine, who is this brilliant mind that we've been talking about, is in the NASA Computing Center among mostly all white men, and she has to go to the bathroom. But this was when the bathrooms were still segregated. So she had to run across campus, literally.
In heels,
with her work in hand, to get to the bathroom that she was, quote-unquote, allowed to use. And that was this aha moment for many in my circle. And I just thought that was such a poignant part for the filmmaker to highlight, because too often in history, we're taught about these, you know, the colored bathrooms, the colored drinking fountains, the colored restaurants, the colored this and that. But folks aren't really understanding the impact on your everyday life. They're not understanding what that meant, mm-hmm, in terms of the inconveniences and the socialization part of it, any of that, and that really brought it to light.
I think the scene that really hit me, that made me really mad, right, was the library scene, where the character is in the library, and she's in the white section of the library because she couldn't find the topic of the book she wanted in the colored section. Book, yeah. And a white woman says, you know, I don't want any trouble, but, you know, you're not supposed to be here. And it just makes me think of things that are happening now. Okay,
well,
you guys?
But say more about that, because to Luz's point about the scene with the bathroom, the movie does a good job of explaining then to a room full of white men who, until that scene, had thought she was just being lazy, mm-hmm, because she wasn't at her desk. She had to leave for 40 minutes because the only colored bathroom was across the campus. Mm-hmm. So the stereotype then that here's the black woman who doesn't do her job gets addressed in the movie very well. And this room of white men finally realize, oh, So that's a moment, but...
But here, this is the thing where the stagecraft in the film can be problematic. As I engage with folks around this, the movie paints these pictures as vividly as they do to make sure that that feeling comes across. But the actual encounter of it is much more subtle. For example, it wasn't Katherine Johnson who encountered that. It was actually Janelle Monáe's character, Mary Jackson, the engineer, mm-hmm. who had the real-life example of that story. And it wasn't all the way across campus. It was, you know, one or two buildings over, just because she wasn't aware of the closer colored bathrooms. But the feeling that she communicates in that experience is the same as the feeling you get in the film. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of times folks will be waiting for this the film version of it. You know, that's the marker of this egregious thing happening. And the reality is much more subtle and has that same impact on folks. So that's one of the tensions I was feeling throughout the film, because it has to really go, you know, paint this really clear, overt picture. Mm-hmm. And that same feeling happens when the covert or less in your face versions of it happen. And that can get lost sometimes in that cinema
piece. Well, and I think that was what I was hoping to bring up and maybe discuss a little bit, because when you see an example like that of, I can't do my job because I have to go two buildings over to use the bathroom, you know, the most racist white person in the world is at least at some level going to understand mm-hmm. that dilemma. Mm-hmm. But there are so many other things in the world, especially today, that are so much more subtle. We don't have segregated bathrooms anymore. Mm-hmm. There's a way of thinking about segregated bathrooms as traumatic as they were. Once that's quote unquote solved, some of those issues get way more under the surface, mm-hmm. right? And it's way more subtle. So how does...
My wife was pissed too, leaving, because yeah. she said she can't come.
We
come
talked
with
about
us.
How mad we were when we left. Yeah.
Because it is this recurring theme of having to be extraordinary or downright insane. I mean, Katherine Johnson's character in the film has to implode and come in just completely drenched in rain in order for somebody to see. And only then are you looked at as fully human.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that constantly. And the juxtaposition is because of Margaret Vaughn's character, the kind of leader, the supervisor, is not really called her full name. It's a motif used in the film that didn't happen necessarily that way in real mm-hmm. life. Although the respect that she got after, you know, the achievement was fine. But I have to achieve in order to for you to respect me. She doesn't get her full name and be recognized as such until she has reached and overcome mm-hmm. something in order to get there.
So why do you guys think this movie is so popular? Like among different races, the white community?
I mean, you were talking about, Hilly, about in school, how you didn't, you know, you had learned incorrectly yeah. about John Glenn. I can remember in school learning the names. So I actually did know the names. I knew Yuri Gagarin, Alan Shepard, John Glenn, Neil Armstrong, mm-hmm. Buzz Aldrin, Jim Lovell.
What's the motif here?
What's the theme with all those names? Those are all white men. Those were the astronauts. Those are the men at the top of the chain who got all the accolades for the credit for the successes of the space program.
We all love a good story, right? Kind of this hero story. So these are heroes in our society, right? And something that we were not taught in school. So people also admire the ability of going in to get entertained and still feed your mind. And it feeds your soul, quite honestly, at the same time. But I also think it's one of these situations where people want to be, there's a curiosity right now in our society around race, that people want to be more informed and more involved. And I think, at least folks that I've talked to, they feel better about themselves as well to be in the know in regards to this topic and being able to share that experience as it pertains to racial equity and the issues that are going on in our community.
Well, there's a great intersection for race and gender at this point now.
Oh, big time.
And the timing of our current election and the rhetoric that's going around, the alternative, big air quotes, facts that are being spewed all over the place, I have to think that also in addition to the intersection of race and gender, here is finally getting some real information that, you know, to correct age-old narratives. I feel like there's a yearning for knowing what's real at this point, too.
There, and there is a part of this film that where the white woman says to one of the black women, you know, I have nothing against you guys. And she says, I believe you. I believe that you believe that. Right. And it's just this dynamic between we're both women, but you're still different. And it just really brings me to what happened over the weekend with the Women's March. And there was a lot of people nationally and locally who a lot of women of color who didn't want to participate because they felt even though they were women of color and were ostracized from it.
That's actually not something I was unaware of the dynamic. Because the stories I saw were how many millions of people across the country participated, and that this was this amazing achievement in organization. And what are people who are opposed to Trump going to do to bottle what happened on Saturday to actually create something that has an effect 2 or 4 years out? What are you referring to?
There's and this is what the scene in the movie in the library. This is what this reminded me of is what other white women who. Are like, you know, I totally respect you as a woman, but you're still different. And you get that feeling of, but I'm a good person because I believe that, right? Because I'm not racist. I just know that you're different. And that means something. I mean, there were people at the rallies who, a lot of women who are white women holding up signs like diversity this and diversity that, but was uncomfortable marching next to a black woman. You know, you could tell, you could tell. And there was...
You were there.
I was there. I was there at the St. Paul March. A lot of the Hmong women, we had collectively decided we were going to wear Hmong hats. And there was just a lot of, your costume is so beautiful. You know, stuff like that. It's like, I'm being a good person by acknowledging you, but you're still different. But I think I'm really awesome because I've acknowledged it.
You know, I also marched, and I was approached probably early December by one of the organizers. And my understanding is there was 125 women who put this together, and this is how it surfaced. And they were very intentional about seeking participation from communities of color, both women and men alike. And they were working with folks to be able to do that, and their lineup in terms of the speakers on Saturday was actually pretty...
It was very diverse.
Pretty diverse.
Yeah. In St. Paul?
In St. Paul. It was pretty solid because there were issues at the national level with the D.C. march early on, very mm-hmm. early on in terms of criticism. So that was kind of a notice to other cities and other marches around the country to learn from that experience. And locally then they started keying into to communities of color. I saw many more folks of color at the march than I anticipated, and I was happy about that. I think we can always do better. I saw quite a bit of Black Lives Matter signage. I saw signs that were in Hmong. I saw the Hmong contingency. There were plenty of signs in Spanish as well. I saw a big contingency of women from the Muslim community as well. I think it depends where you were at. I mean, there were 100,000 people, right?
And so I think also if you just read some of the stuff online, people, women of color writing why they don't support the march, or now white women are saying, you guys are the issue, we should unite, and now you're trying to divide us by race. So there's this whole dynamic going on right now about that.
Well, add the layer in, too. Because of the support that Donald Trump had amongst white women, there's this tension and these conversations mm-hmm. going Definitely. On across communities of color, women of color in particular, of saying, you know, you've got these millions of folks outpouring and marching, but there was also this great deal of support amongst white women for Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. So there's this air of, can I trust this? And what's, you know, how is it that we have got all of this solidarity coming out now? And, you know, knowing that a lot, some of the folks standing right next to you are folks who either voted for Trump or stayed out of and didn't vote at all. So
voted third party.
Yeah. So how are we having a conversation now? You know, there's this tension there that comes up with that, you know, that needs some exploration and some discourse.
You know, I heard some interviews on NPR today. This individual interviewed individuals from Oklahoma about Trump's presidency and what's going on. And the comments, to me, clearly reminded me of the division that we have in this country. But the division, while it's framed in my mind around the racial structure of how our country was created, but more so the answers that were coming from these individuals that didn't acknowledge the racial divide or the racial segregation or structure of our country. To me, as I listened to these individuals talk, kind of like what we, some of this was apparent in the movie also. And I truly am, you know, believe this, that a lot of individuals, whether they want to or not, just don't know and have no knowledge or awareness whatsoever of the social construct of race. They're aware of race. They're aware of prejudice. They're aware of those kind of things. But in their mind, I don't think they fully comprehended the impact it has on communities of color and people of color in this country. And so their answers are such that it's that awareness is so lacking. And you get the general response that, well, everybody, if they just pulled up their bootstraps and if everybody just worked and, you know, and just did that, these we wouldn't have these problems. Now, are they saying that, you know, because they're, to me, they're saying it because they're not aware that we have these additional barriers in place that many of us have to overcome. And sometimes trying to have those conversations, kind of healthy conversations about that, fall sometimes on empty slates. And there's so much work and education that has to go involved in order for us to even have that kind of conversation, as opposed to, I think, to what you're describing with, you know, with what we're kind of used to dealing with here is this white liberalism that acknowledges and they're aware of this, but still doesn't know how to communicate about it effectively.
You know, one common theme that we heard locally in the St. Paul March, as well as the national, and quite honestly, international, because we know there are right countries around the world. And shout out to Ecuador. I have a cousin who is in Ecuador, and she said they had a march. Was that women's rights are human rights.
Yes.
And that's what we're getting to here, right? And there's a quote that I used just last week. Gloria Steinem says, when unique voices are united in a common cause, they make history. So if we take that thought and kind of come off of the discussion here is, if the 100,000 plus Minnesotans who were there this weekend are united along the lines of any human rights, right? Mm-hmm. So Black Lives Matter and immigrant rights and GLBTQ rights, and the list goes on, then that's when we make history together. When all of these different parts of our community are united from a very authentic, genuine point and baseline, then we will get where we need to be. But the problem is that we have to get through the divisiveness and that we're talking about and see the humanity in all of this, because that's really fundamentally what we're talking about. We're talking about human rights, and seeing the humanity in all of these issues is what we need to see.
And do you think that's enough? If that comes together, is that enough to combat the Tea Party, to combat this ideology that seems to have coming out, you know, this energy that Trump has tapped into? Because it's that kind of core that I think, you know, the Democrats or this idealism that you're talking about, of which we're trying to address, how do we combat that? And is it combating that, or, you know, and so you know, when a whole segment of the population who's been left out in class, but we're talking race, and since class and race have been used successfully to keep us divided, how do we heal that divide? You know, so I mean, so for me, a film like what we saw, I think, you know, gives individuals, at least individuals who don't think about that kind of stuff, these kind of aha moments, mm-hmm. whether it's staged or not, I think it's beneficial. So me, I always find hope in something like that, that there individuals might come out of there at least with a little bit more awareness.
So what I get on the other end, though, is in racial consciousness development work is, see, these three did it. Why and it's a complete bypassing of the lived, real, on-the-ground, day-to-day pieces. So I get nervous about I love the films. I'm like, this is great. It's great that we've got more cinema and more experiences from multiracial
And they actually hired black people to portray black people?
Exactly. all those pieces are great, which I can't say in the Asian community because you got Matt Damon now, who's about to be the white savior for Chinese folks because Tom Cruise already
saved the Japanese.
But
man.
There's what I'm
the
missing.
Lone Ranger.
what I'm missing is the real interesting stories about everyday navigation of these pieces, because otherwise we get back into this diversity porn kind of scenario where we never really get to the real life day-to-day examples. So I've got great high ideals on one end. I've got finally uncovering stories on the other, but there's no discourse about what this looks like in a real day-to-day experience. So now I don't have examples to carry.
So something as simple, and my daughter just, you know, my 14-year-old just gets upset with me whenever I go off on the TV. So something just as simple as all the local news channels, and each one of them kind of follow the same script. So at about, you know, 20 minutes into the program or 25 minutes, they do their feel-good stories, right? And the feel-good stories are always on some white family. And so I'm always going off in the living room going, nah, if they just would highlight a family of color, a black family,
oh my God,
a Hmong family,
a
Native American. I mean, you know, if they just started doing little things like that.
So what we're talking about, again, is going back to what I said earlier about the humanity in folks, right? Is if seeing the humanity in people, in all people, people of color in particular, in their everyday lives, so that it ends up being, so if the humanity means that someone has had to, you know, take three buses to get to a job because historically, you know, they haven't had access to wages that allow them to buy transportation, then we should be able to understand that, right? And understand how that impacts their ability to navigate the system.
Like the DeVos woman who's up for the education position said, you can just move.
There's an interesting piece that comes up as I hear you talk about that then too, because who's represented in these marches all around is a wide swath of folks. There were folks around me, and because I always engage in the conversation around, who did not vote, right? And it just reminds me of the fact that when we talk about the election and we think about that, we're only talking about 50% of folks in the country weighing in. I think did it go over 50, maybe 51% of the population weighed in, period. So already we're missing half of the voices, so we don't really know what's real. And then we come back down and even less, you know, in less than half of them, right, only like 24% of that 50% voted for Donald Trump. And so, I just keep coming back to, as we talk about blending in hidden figures with this, there's this real big space of not even knowing what's real because folks aren't speaking, is even though you hear a whole lot of folks who are, what about the folks who are not speaking and what's going on in there?
But at the same time, it's kind of the system, right? Like in Hidden Figures with all the, you know, you couldn't have water from the same canister as the white folks. You have to have a colored folks one. There's all this stuff holding them down in the movie, right? It's still the same way. There's still these people who are trying to get by
voter ID laws, their gerrymanderings, there's, you know, you can't get time off work. I mean, why isn't it a national holiday for us to go and vote? So even though it's, I feel like, even though it seems like, oh man, our country is not, doesn't participate enough, there's so many things holding people back from participating.
Voter turnout. Talking about the systemic barriers.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Voter turnout was 55%, the lowest since 1996. Mm. I just looked it up. As we come near the end, though, the movie, I really enjoyed the movie Hidden Figures, and the premise of the movie is the story of, it's staged around three, I mean, the story of these women, the black women, computers was a vast number of them. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just these three, but the story of three women of color who did something in a mostly male, white world that you've never heard about, and they changed history. Who are the hidden figures? What's the next Hidden Figures movie that has to be told?
Oh, man, you got a rollout list?
I mean, who are the stories of people that Halee never learned about in school for whom we should make the next movie?
Let's...
Grace Lee Boggs.
Say more.
Oh, she was an Asian activist who did a lot of work in Detroit. She was on the streets every day until she was 90-something and recently passed away. Her story was a story I didn't know until recently because I had a friend who had read her book, you know, and then when I learned about it, and she was already in hospice care at the point that I learned about her, and I just thought, why haven't I learned about this woman before? You know, it really was one of those situations of like, I was angry at my education of not having learned the story of people like her. Not even specifically like her, because I know a lot of people do that kind of activism work, but to be an Asian American working in Detroit to fight for rights for the black community is like, that's an amazing story, right?
Another one is getting ready to come out. I don't know what the name of the title is, but we referenced it prior to, is the one that's coming out on James Baldwin.
I Am Not Your Negro.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and James Baldwin, while maybe well-known in the African-American black community, may not be as well-known in the dominant culture. And so, you know, there are figures. I was sitting here trying to think on the Native American side, but you know, in that regard, you know, since we're so tribal, you know, there are many individuals who I can't name because I can't speak my language that, you know, have contributed quite a bit to our country and society. There's so many. The problem is that many of them are unknown to us also.
Yeah.
All right? Because
you can't answer the question because you don't know yourself.
Because how can we name individuals that we have no knowledge about? And so movies like this are while we know we've participated in the growth of this country, besides just being slaves and besides just taking our land, those stories aren't shared with us. So even a movie like this is eye-opening.
So my suggestion is Sabrina Gonzalez-Pasterski, who's being dubbed as the next Albert Einstein. She's a 22-year-old grad from MIT who graduated with a perfect score, 5.0, and is now a Harvard PhD candidate. At age 12, she built a plane and taught herself how to pilot the plane.
Wow.
She's Cuban-American.
You're reading off
and
a
I'm
website
reading
here,
off
but, yeah.
of a website because I read about her a year or so ago, and everyone is basically calling her the next Albert Einstein. So she's and she's a millennial, and she's in the moment, and more to come about her.
I'm going to enter into the space two folks. One, because of all the talk about John Lewis in the wake of the quote-unquote dust-up between our president and his excoriating of a civil rights hero who marched and bloodied himself for all of her rights, we hold up John Lewis and the story of SNCC. So I really want to enter that into a below-the-line, because all of these to me are below-the-line. Below the line being there's a line in which we have common knowledge. Above the line is the common knowledge. Below the line is the stuff we don't know. It's the hidden stuff. Mm-hmm. Because Ella Baker started SNCC, but often we will go straight to Marion Barry and
Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee.
Yeah. The main on-the-ground organizing front for a lot of the civil rights work that happened, for which Southern Christian Leadership Council, you know, used a lot of their organizing work because they were the young folks, right? So again, we have men overriding the original founder of it, who was a woman, right? So I definitely want that story. And then George Washington Carver, who we owe for, you know, he's a little bit more well known just in terms of name, but we, a lot from crop rotation to so many other inventions using agriculture for things, who worked and organized with Native folks. And so there's a whole lot of Native names that are connected to his research, who was castrated as a boy, as a slave, and his voice never changed. And so when you actually listen to recordings of George Washington Carver, he sounds like he's 12. And so there's a whole lot of history that we owe almost all of the materials that we enjoy that are agricultural based, we owe to his genius. So that's another one I would enter into the.
I'm going to throw in my mom. Right? I mean, does it have to be somebody who's considered on mainstream society as quote unquote successful or changing the world? You know, who fled war country, raised five. How many of them are this? An immigrant who fled war and raised five daughters and two boys in Minnesota, all college graduates, all, you know, moving forward with their lives. I mean, that to me is an amazing story. I don't think that they have to have changed the entire world to be considered a hero or a story that deserves to be told.
Mm. Then I would add to enter in Helen Shichia, who was a Japanese internment camp photographer, lived right here in St. Louis Park, Minnesota. It wasn't until a group of kids interviewed her and wrote a song about her life in the St. Louis Park schools that we started to get that. I would also add in there Gatsu Sharing. This one actually does have some world connotations. But he lived in this little house in Columbia Heights. And again, until a group of students interviewed him and sang a story about his life story. Shout out to Larry Long and the Elders Wisdom Children's Song Program. But he, all of a sudden, we see this guy who helped the Dalai Lama organize the preservation of books and establish the library system in India, preserving Tibetan literature. And he was living in a house right around the corner from Columbia Heights Middle School. So we've gone around. I want to hear Tom's. What's your suggestion?
I don't have any names. I think on Don's point, I don't know anybody. But I keep thinking about, you know, this movie was about science. I'm thinking about the tech boom we're all sitting on with iPhones.
Yes.
We know about Steve Jobs. Was there anyone else working in that room?
I'm sure there was.
Who were women of color, men of color who we've never heard of. I think about Hollywood.
Medicine.
Cuba,
who has a cure for cancer, lung cancer.
Medicine Alley here at the University of Minnesota, first heart transplant. I don't know the answer to this question, but you think even just on the science, you know, you think about Hollywood, you think about we got a lot of movies to make here, everybody.
Well, it's in that vein that we'll have to definitely close. But I want to tie us together a little bit on as we look at the themes from Hidden Figures to the themes of the marches on the ground and the way that we're out there getting information and trying to recover information and figure out what our direction is. I always go back to my teachings growing up culturally. I mean, this idea comes from a Akan peoples of West Africa. It's a Dinkra symbol called Sankofa. It's a picture of a bird looking back to its back. And the idea is, if you don't look where you've been, you can't figure out where you're going, right? And so I'll leave us with that in that space. And next time when we come back together for Counter Stories, we can carry even more of those missing histories of our collective ancestors. Thank you for listening and engaging with us. My name is Anthony Galloway.
I'm Whaley.
Don Eubanks.
Luz Maria Frias.
And Tom Weber.
And this is Counter Stories.
Luz Maria Frias, an attorney with a public policy background. Don Eubanks teaches at Metropolitan State University. Anthony Galloway is a race equity advocate, and Halle Lee is a media artist. Hidden Figures, nominated for Best Picture just this morning. We also mentioned the documentary I Am Not Your Negro. That also was nominated for Best Documentary.